This is episode 107 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. Why in the world would I interview one of America's top school assembly entertainers when all the schools are closed? Well, here's why. When this whole COVID-19 crisis is over, and it will be over at some point, schools will get back in session. And the people who take action now are the ones that are going to be ready. The people who act now are the people who are going to get all the school assemblies. In today's interview, my guest holds nothing back. We discuss the best way to increase the SEO on your website, how to educate and entertain every age group, and most importantly, how to dominate the school show market. Now's the time, folks. Don't let this get away from you. Oh, and two other things. First, listen to the very end of the podcast. I left in a little bonus of my guest and I talking that I cut out of the show. It's kind of fun. Secondly, towards the end, my guest has a free offer for you to help get you through this coronavirus stress and anxiety. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
He's one of the busiest school assembly entertainers in the country. He specializes in age-appropriate entertainment for various grades: bully prevention, leadership, making good choices, drug awareness, math, reading. He does it all. And to top it all off, he also performs Murder by Magic, a corporate banquet program that you can buy ready-made. Variety Artist, I give you Chris Johnson.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks for having me. How are you doing in the zombie apocalypse?
Oh, man, it's crazy, crazy, because you and I are in the same markets, and so I think we've had the same results, just no shows for the next couple of months.
Well, I'm catching up on my sleep and playing with my dogs and generally enjoying life right now, so I think that's the important thing, to keep a positive mindset. I still work every day just from home.
Yeah, me too. It seems like I'm busier now than I think I was when I was performing.
Catching up on my reading, making tweaks and adjustments. Like, I made a minor adjustment to one of my assembly programs. I'm not going to bore the listeners to this, but I equate it to a story I read about Lance Burton, where he made a change to his manipulation act, and he was really excited about it. And then come to find out, but something along the lines of he had like a match steel. He adjusted it like half an inch from his original hiding place, and that made all the difference in the world to him. He was really excited. You know, that kind of stuff. All those little tweaks and adjustments, filing off the edges and polishing your performances. I'm doing a lot of that now. So when I get ready to get back in the field, I'll be ready to rock and roll.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the reasons that I'm having you on here, because I know a lot of school entertainers aren't performing for a while, but this will all come back at some point in time. And when it does, I want everybody to be ready. And I think they can learn a lot from what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. Basically, what I'm doing is I'm prepping for the fall, because that's when I'm hoping things go back to normal, at least partially. You're working on marketing, working on contacting past clients. You know, I'm not doing any marketing per se right now, because God knows nobody wants to hear from me.
Right.
But I'm getting it all in place. So I have a feeling that, you know, it's going to be like Niagara Falls. You know, the water's going to come running down, and I'm hoping there's going to be a lot of demand. Maybe I'm being overly optimistic, but it's either that or, you know, cry.
I hope so too. I think once this is all done, people are going to be dying for entertainment and assemblies and things that we offer and provide.
Yeah. My wife told me something about it on Facebook. Somebody had said they finished Netflix. Like everything.
they finished Netflix.
Yeah. Which I just came apart laughing at that. That just made me laugh.
All right. So let's get into the school assembly thing. How did you start doing school assemblies?
It's funny because, like, you know, the old classic story, I got the magic cell when I was 8 years old, became captivated by magic. And back when I was growing up, it seems like every decade there's like one big magician. You know, like, you know, the 70s it was Doug Penning, and the right. 80s was Copperfield, 90s was Blaine. Well, I grew up in the Copperfield era, so I look forward to his specials every year. My cousin Rebecca was dating a youth pastor at a church who was an amateur magician. When they were dating, and he was like 15 years my senior, came to my house and did this entire 30-minute magic show for me and my parents. I was captivated. It was like in my house. I was just blown away by it. So I got the magic book. And then years later, started doing some birthday parties and things like that. I don't remember who gave me the idea originally. Oh, it was actually one of my clients, one of my birthday clients. She had contacted me. Goes, oh, I just love your birthday show. Evan still talks about your show, you know, whatever the kid's name was. can you do a show for our school assembly, you know, on the topic of bullying? And I had no idea what to do. And she sent me some notes that the school wanted to hear about, and that's how I put together my first iteration of the show. So the idea first came from one of my clients. And from there, it just kind of snowballed from there. I did mostly bullying shows for the first several years. So I took a cue from Doc Dixon, because that's mostly what he does. And then over the years, I started adding more shows to fill more niche needs. That's basically how it got started. And I got into marketing. I got the Dave D marketing course, you know, back in the day. And
well, you and I are cut from the same cloth, because I did the exact same thing. I got the Dave D marketing course, and I followed him and then Dan Kennedy, and probably similar to what you did, right?
Oh, totally. Oh, totally. And then in 2005, I learned stage hypnosis. So I do that as well. Not as much as I used to, because of all late night stuff. So I'm also a hypnotist, and I became a hypnotherapist and had a clinic for a few years. Basically, my true love was the stage. So I closed the clinic, devoted myself completely to stage, and my income just skyrocketed.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I am today.
Well, the great thing about doing school assemblies is most entertainers that are listening to this, their weekends are filled. But doing school assemblies, you know, you and I both work almost every weekday.
Yeah.
So we have the weekends free for our families.
Oh, it's fantastic. My wife likes sex. My wife owns a hair salon. She's close too. So we're quite cozy right now. When she's off, I'm off. And I talked to her during this whole thing with COVID-19. I'm like, you may be able to get back into birthday parties. And she's like, oh God, then your weekends are filled up and I won't see you anymore. I'm like,
that's right.
We'll see how it goes.
With school assemblies, what do you think are the best or some good subjects to do for school assemblies?
Oh, well, let's see. Bullying remains a hot topic. There's sort of a paradigm shift in some of the school markets based on what I've read on the school show forum in other states. You know, some people are shying away from the word bully, but the subject matter is still germane. And I know you do a couple of different bully shows too.
Yep.
Character education is still big. Reading is huge. You know, and then the curriculum, I think, is where the future is at, because as you know, schools value their class time more and more, I think a lot of, and this is just my opinion, I think a lot of these softer subjects like bullying and character ed may eventually go away. I hope not, because I think it's still needed. That's my prediction in however many years. So I think in the future, it's going to be primarily curriculum-based. Mm-hmm. Reading, science, math, history, that kind of stuff. Stuff that reinforces the curriculum, I think, is going to become more and more important in the years to come. I mean, that's just, you know, speculation of myself, putting my finger in the air and you know, kind of read the tea leaves. Those are the main subjects that I find the most successful with. I still do maybe a half a dozen to a dozen drug awareness shows. Every time I get ready to pull it off my site and get rid of it, I suddenly get a lot of leads for it. It's still there. It's not a top topic, but you know, 6 or 12 shows, I'm willing to keep doing it.
Yeah, I get a lot of those during Red Ribbon Week. Red Ribbon Week is the no drug week. They still have that, but now they've combined Red Ribbon Week with Bully Month, and they've combined these two or three things all together, and Halloween.
Exactly. But you can relate to this, where they want you to combine bully, character, and drug awareness all in one show, and my head explodes.
Yeah, I just tell them, no, you can have one or the other.
Exactly. For a while, I actually offered two different bully programs with different subject matter, and people would contact me and they wanted to combine, like a Chinese menu. Can we take three from this one and four from that one? I'm like, no. So I just dropped it and I just have one show now.
I have two bully shows, but I get the same thing. Can you do part of your animal magic show? That's a weird one. Can you do part of your animal magic show and part of your bully show? No, I can't. So what do you find the big difference is between a school assembly and a family fun night? Because those are very different animals. Speaking of animals.
Oh, man, you aren't kidding. I'll do some of them in the same day. The biggest thing that I've seen, if this sends shudders down your spine, I apologize, is that during the day, the psychology is kids are, this is why I like school assemblies, one of the reasons, because the kids are a captive audience. They're not self-selecting. They have to be there. But they're so happy to be out of class. And as opposed to a birthday party where it's all about little Johnny, he's hyped up on sugar, and it's all about him, and it's uncontrollable. And this ties into the family night thing, where I've always made this analogy about prisoners being released in the prison. Mm-hmm. At nighttime, the kids are back at school, but it's a voluntary thing. They turn into like, just my experience, they turn into like little animals. So it's much harder to control the kids in a nighttime situation, a family night thing. I was at a school last year. Oh, and the kids were like literally hurling themselves against the wall and dangling from the basketball hoops. You know, the same kids that during the day were angels. And I'm like watching all this. And the principal's like, yeah, they kind of look at the school like their living room. And I was getting paler and paler. And it was a really tough show. And I'm glad it's over.
Oh, man. So how does the pricing work if with the assemblies as opposed to the family fun night? Because I know a lot of family fun nights, a lot of folks do them as fundraisers where they actually make money for the schools, whereas school assemblies, I don't know, there's a number of different ways of pricing them. You don't have to tell me your prices, but how do you go about pricing them?
The way that I do it is I give schools three different ways that they can do this. The first way is they can book the family night fundraiser by itself. And I travel a lot, so I've got hotel expenses and whatnot. So if they want to book the family fun night without my daytime assembly program, I just charge the same amount I would charge for a daytime assembly because the traveling is the same, the setup is roughly the same. The second option is if they have one of my daytime assembly programs during the day, then I will give them the family night fundraiser for half price at night because I'm already there. Third option is if they book my daytime family fundraiser and then at nighttime we can sell tickets. And I only give them that option for venues that I can travel to like within the same day. Like in other words, less than 4 hours away because I can do it, come back home. I'm not doubling up on my hotel expenses because I have on occasion had very small crowds turn out and I don't want to lose my butt and have another hotel stay for that small group. So I restrict that option, me personally, to within like 3-4 hours of my house. And I've had some really good clients where they want to do the ticket sales and then, you know, sell the tickets for like $1 a piece. And so I also put a restriction. I go, you have to charge at least $5 a ticket.
Oh yeah.
I've heard other people, they will do the ticket sales without any kind of payment requirement, but they will require like a minimum threshold. Like in other words, how's it go? They will take the first 100 tickets. And then after that, they do a split with the school or something like that.
So they have to be paid whatever the minimum fee is. People do show up for magic shows.
Betsy, you can relate to this as well, that if you do a show during the day and you get them hopped up during the daytime assemblies, then you double your door. Like when I do it with a ticket split, what I found is they'll sell whatever, say 100 tickets leading up to the day of my assembly. And then during the assembly, I do the show, get them hopped up for the nighttime show. And I talk about a few marquee tricks like, oh, I can float one of you in the air.
Right.
Yeah, I used to do my head chopper. We're going to put one of you in my 6-foot guillotine. A couple of marquee tricks where in a couple of short phrases, you can describe what it means and everybody knows what it means. That gets them really excited. And whatever they pre-sold the tickets, I would find they would double it at the door. So they sold 100 tickets in advance. At the door, they get 100 walk-ups. And I also provide them with flyers and take-home and press releases and all kinds of goofy things the school can use to get the word out to their parents and community as well.
During school assemblies, if I was doing a family fun night, I actually don't do this anymore, but I would mention that I would cut the principal in half. And that was a big draw.
Oh, yeah.
Even if the kids didn't get a ticket before, they're like, oh, well, we got to go see that.
Yeah. I did that one time where I used to have a 6-foot-tall guillotine, and now I went to like a Lester Lake style head chopper. And I used to do that. I used to do the thing about the principal. Oh, we're gonna put the principal's head in the guillotine, and that was it, like you said, it was a huge draw. And I got to this one show, and there was this very, very, very nice lady, but she was heavy set, very heavy set, and had really bad knees. And she and literally to get through the trick, I had to have two other men lift the guillotine up higher off the ground so she could put her head into it without getting down on her knees. And we got through it and everything. And they're like, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to be looking the principal up and down going, uh-oh, see if this will work.
Yeah. Exactly. For my own personal peace of mind, I just eliminated that selling point. I'm like, we're going to put somebody in the head chopper now, not the principal. I still think it's a selling point to have the principal. So if you do something where body condition and size doesn't matter, then I think it's still a huge selling point. Most of my programs, at one point, I get a teacher up on stage, and the kids go crazy for it. You'll see the principal on stage, and they can do an amazing piece of magic, make him look like a hero. Turn this into a marketing phone call. Make him look like a hero, and you teach the principal a trick ahead of time, and they'll walk away a hero. That's a huge selling point. So, you know, there's a free gift for the listeners.
Or even making the principal appear magically. That's a great one too.
Yeah, exactly.
The principal looks like a hero and And then he announces the amazing Chris Johnson.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I was looking on your website and I love your assembly of the month. This is something I don't do. This is pretty cool. Tell me about that.
Oh, you know what? That's actually something that my marketing team, because I have a web team that does most of my online marketing for me. I mean, you know, I have input, obviously. They just came up with that idea like 2 months ago.
That's a great idea.
The first one for March 1st, and then COVID-19 hit, and now I've got this March or this April thing advertising these assemblies. It'll be germane when schools get back to session. But the idea they came up with for me is let's do a highlight thing, having it move between a library show and an assembly show. So it's two different shows highlighted every month. And the way that I look at it is that it helps my SEO rankings. Google likes it when your website changes content. Not too often. They like it when you update your site, add new content, change things around. When customers go to the site, they see that it's visually very arresting. What I try to do with my web team is I tell them, here are the ones I want to focus on every month. In January, I'll focus on reading. And September, I'll focus on character and bullying, that kind of thing. And just try to pick the topics that I know school is going to be looking for anyway. If school PTO personnel and principals are just going online and checking out all the different entertainers out there, they hit mine and that just jumps out at them. I don't have much more to say to it other than that, and just pre-plan as to what you know your clients would be looking for. The last thing I'm going to do is have the assembly of the month be Christmas in June, for example. So it's got to make some sense.
Right.
Pretty simple strategy.
That does a couple of things, that strategy. Not only do you probably sell a few more of that particular assembly, whatever it is, that particular month, but you're also planting a seed for the future. If a school wants a reading assembly in May, for example, but they saw it in January, when May rolls around, right, They'll be like, oh yeah, this guy, Chris Johnson, oh yeah, he has a reading assembly. I read about that somewhere.
Yeah, totally.
And you're doing the power of suggestion.
It's got a lot of really cool benefits. I mean, I got myself a really good company. A lot of the stuff is their idea. So thank goodness for them.
Wow. So you have a company that does your SEO or your marketing?
Yeah. And I can even post a link to the company because I don't mind sharing it because they won't take anybody in my niche within, I think it's like 4 hours around my house or something like that. So, they don't want to cross-contaminate their efforts. So if anybody in Western New York wants them, sorry. For other people across the country and stuff, I referred Tim Stenton, listen to me talk. I get so excited. I'm like a chihuahua. Sent them to Tim Sonnenfeld. He's using them now.
Oh, yeah.
And a couple of other people. So, they're a really good company. They're one of my biggest secret weapons for my income exploding the last few years. I mean, they're just outstanding.
Do you mind if I ask, how do they charge you?
They charge by like the hour. Like they'll say, you can buy our services by the hour. There's no contract. I've been working with them for years. I started off with $200. I believe they charge either $200 for an hour or $100 an hour, whatever it is. And here's the thing, one of the things I really wanted to communicate in this interview is the idea of SEO is a long game. You can't put a lot of work in SEO in like a month and expect results. So it's got to be a long game. So about 3 years ago, I hired them, and my business was like, it wasn't in the crater, but it was like less than half of what it is now. So I found them, hired them, paid them $200 a month, and they will do whatever I want for $200 a month. They want me to do social media, they'll do social media. They want me to do SEO, they'll do SEO. What they will do for me is whatever I want them to do. After 2 years, I noticed I started getting really great results, so I upped it. I went up to $400 a month. So now they do twice as much for me every month, and my results are spectacular. I mean, I'm ranked very, very highly for, the proper keywords and everything, and they just do great.
Pardon the interruption, folks, but I realized that I forgot to ask Chris the name of the marketing company he uses. Here it is. It's called New York Marketing. I'll put the link on Chris's show notes page. Just go to the episode page at thevarietyartist.com, check out Chris's show notes, and the link will be there. Now on with the show.
For me, it's very reasonable. I still do AdWords, but back in the day when AdWords, this I'm talking like 10 years ago or so, AdWords was like my main way of reaching new clients. And I was paying like $1,000 a month. That was back when a click for a certain keyword was like $1, $1.50, and now it's like three times that for certain keywords or higher. So while AdWords is still a part of my marketing platform, it's not the part of my platform, and that's really advantageous. So while $400 a month may sound like a lot, hell of a lot better than $1,000.
And that $400 that you're spending, you're multiplying it with return on investment.
Yeah, big time.
In some of the paperwork I gave you, you mentioned the Borg approach. What exactly is that?
First of all, a little bit of what is a Borg? Star Trek. I'm a big Star Trek nerd. Borg are these half cybernetic, half organisms. They assimilate people in Star Trek. You know, like they'll go to a planet full of humanoids, like whether it's Earth or Klingons or Romulans, and they'll suck up the entire population, implant them with all these cybernetic implants, and turn them into half machine, half people. Mm-hmm. They assimilate, and they learn from them, and they learn how to conquer other people and everything. So the Borg approach is all about assimilation. So my approach to being a Borg has made my business skyrocket. In other words, I learn something, I implement it, I don't try to do it all myself. I see a lot of magicians out there, school assembly guys, birthday guys, corporate guys, and they put together their own website. They look like crap.
Yep.
None of the people I interact with on a regular basis on the school show forum, but some of these websites just look awful.
By the way, just to interrupt you, I'm happy about that.
Yeah. Well, it makes us stand out.
Exactly.
Yeah, it really does. And I get it. A lot of it comes down to economics. I mean, I know the first 10 years of my career, I couldn't pay a web team to design a really killer website for me. I just couldn't afford it. But my advice to the pros out there, and you know who you are, if you're able to farm something out to the professionals, do it. Because we can't be the best that we can do for everything, all facets of our business. And we have to be writers, we have to be producers, we have to be marketing gurus, we have to be this, we have to be that. So my approach is, if something I don't enjoy and I need to do it for my business, I farm it out. Like some of the people I talk to, they're like, oh, I can't build props. I was just talking to Jim Cleveland on the telephone today, about an hour and a half ago, and he was talking about building some new props. I'm like, man, I admire the hell out of you because I can't build props. If I try to build a prop, I'm in danger of losing a thumb. As a result, I farm that out. I buy props. Other people have said to me, well, once you try doing it, you'll get used to it, you'll get better. I go, but I don't enjoy it. So if something I don't enjoy and I can afford to farm it out, I do. And my life's been a lot happier. I have more time on my hands to spend with my family, that work-life balance, and I get better results. I'm not a graphic designer. I'm not going to take the time to learn how to code and be a graphic designer. I farm that out. I used to do my own AdWords. And I used to be really into AdWords too, and I did it all myself. And then they changed the algorithms, it got really confusing, and my rankings dropped. So now I farm that out. So be a Borg. That's my recommendation.
There you go.
But I do say this: you're right to all the people out there who do their own thing, who don't invest in their marketing. It does. It makes those of us who go in a different direction stand out, and that's good for us too.
Yeah, and anybody that can do exactly what you're talking about, they will stand out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and without copying, like I ran into this issue a couple of years ago with another performer. If you see somebody's website you like and you steal their web copy word for word, all you're doing is hurting yourself. And I'm directing this to other people listening, because what happens is if Google sees the same exact wording on multiple websites, both websites get penalized. So it would always behoove you to have different website copy that's in your own voice. Mm-hmm. Like I bought Doug Shear's Wacky Science Show and his Uncle Sam's Comedy Jam Show, both fantastic programs. Yes. I wrote all my own web copy because I did not want Google to penalize me or Doug. That's just how Google's algorithms look. They don't want to see the same exact thing.
Right.
I know you, John, you've got the Discover Magic thing going on. Yeah. I looked into that and everything. I looked at your web copy and it's all unique to you,
yeah,
which is fantastic. Even though it's the same product, it's unique to you. And that's fantastic. That's only going to benefit you and the other people using it.
I hope so. that's my idea. That's my thought.
Yeah.
The Discover Magic thing, for people listening to this who have not heard of that, it's teaching magic classes. And right now we're teaching them online, because that's the way things are going for the next couple of months at least, huh?
I actually had a library contact me about doing an online show, and I turned them down. I know there's a lot of talk, a lot of scuttlebutt now on the internet about doing online shows. If that's the way you're going to take your business, hey, more power to you. I thought about this for a couple of weeks because one of my school principal clients, she's also a client of my wife's hair salon, and she said, oh, Chris, I'm going to start doing online shows because of the virus and everything. And I personally decided not to do it. No matter how good my show is online, if the schools look at it as, oh, well, we can get an online video on YouTube for next to nothing on all these cool special effects and things. So it makes what we do less valuable. And again, I'm not trying to dissuade people from making a living. It's just my own personal standpoint. And my show is so interactive anyway. I mean, I tend to freeze up in front of the camera. Whenever I do like a video intro for one of my demo videos or something like that. And then it takes me like an hour to do like a 5-minute take because I get so frozen in front of a camera with no audience.
Oh, yeah.
I personally will not do live shows because I will just suck at it.
Yeah. I'm in the same conundrum because all of my routines have volunteers. That's half the fun of it.
Yeah.
Is having somebody from the audience, having fun with them and having fun with them on stage. And that's half the comedy. So one of the difficult things doing it online is not having volunteers. It's basically you in front of the camera.
Yeah. I mean, I would have, if I took all my shows as they were right now, and I just chopped out the volunteer parts, I have like a 15-minute show.
Yeah, you put all your shows together into one now.
Exactly. It's the anti-bullying, drug awareness, reading, conservation, magic science show.
That's right. The schools finally get what they want.
Yeah. Also known as magic potpourri. Yeah.
Well, since we're talking about doing school shows, do you have any cool, fun, crazy kid stories? You've been doing this for a while. So I know I have a bunch of them. Do you have any?
I made a list. It's a short list. I was doing the show, and this was like 7 years ago, and this one stands out in my head because getting older, just turned 48, back, you know, not long after I crossed the 40-year-old threshold of doing a show, when behind my backdrop, I wear a headset mic on stage, so I bent over to pick up a prop, and I went, ugh, you know, those old man noises. And clear as day, I could hear from the front row, a little second grade girl goes, is he okay?
Oh, no.
She was so sweet. Yeah, which conflicts with another story. I was getting ready for the show, and the kids are coming in, they're sitting down. And of course, you know, they bring the first line of kids, they sit down, and they fill the rows back, you know, in the gym. So I'm just kind of like standing around, you know, smiling with the kids, high fives, that kind of stuff. And this one kid looks at me with a really stoic expression on his face, and he says, are you a magician? I said, yeah. He goes, are you any good? And I said, well, I guess we're going to find out now, won't we?
I had a kid come up to me one time and say, hey, are you a magician? I say, yes, I am. He says to me, are you famous? And I said, well, today I am.
Well, you know, the fame thing has changed because people used to say to me, you know, have you been on TV? Now they say, are you on YouTube?
That's right.
Yeah, and I said, yes, I do. I am on YouTube. Because, you know, again, I've got all my videos on YouTube, which are then embedded on my site. So, yeah, a couple more quick stories.
Sure.
I was doing a hand chopper routine, and I still do the hand chopper routine for my drug awareness show. And I know a lot of magicians shy away from that, but I just do it for upper grades. It's got a great tie-in. The teachers love it and everything. So, anyway, I'm doing a routine. I'm getting ready to have this kid put his hand. And I tell the kid, you know, the kid, this is a fake trick prop, and it's got a message to it. You know, I got this written boisterous fifth grader, and he goes to put his hand in the chopper, and he goes, this is going to be the last time you're ever going to see this hand. And conversely, I was doing the same trick about a year later, and I go through all the buildup, and, you know, there's all this comedy and everything, and the blade comes down and goes through the kid's hand, and he looks at his hand, he looks at the blade, and he goes, oh, what a ripoff. You know, like he wanted to get cut.
That's when you pull out the fake hand and you say, well, this was my last volunteer.
Yeah, exactly. My wife gave me the idea for that routine because she saw me do my drug awareness routine a few months ago, in fact. And she goes, you got to get a fake hand and put a dog squeaker toy in it.
That's a good idea. What is murder by magic? What is that?
Murder by magic is something I created 10, 12 years ago. I don't even remember how long ago I created it, but this was back when I wasn't quite magic for all occasions, but I was splitting my time between school assemblies and corporate. I was doing a show, and I was doing a blindfold act during I was doing a mentalism show. I should specify that. Mentalism is, you know, like mind reading, that kind of stuff. During my mind reading act, the blindfold act, excuse me, I heard one person in the audience say in a loud whisper, oh, the same guy, the guy last year did the same thing. So immediately I thought, I got to come up with something new because I'm not good at creating new magic tricks, but I'm really good at scripting and coming up with concepts. And I had the idea for a murder mystery. And I was like struggling to make it fit into one particular routine. And I remember I was sitting in my old office in my old house and it just hit me like a brick. I'm like, why don't I do the whole show as a murder mystery? So the concept of the show is it's literally as it sounds. Here's a setup. Here's what the audience sees. The HR director, whoever hired me, whoever gets stuck introducing me, because, you know, corporate audiences, they just love introducing people. So they come out and they say, ladies and gentlemen, you're in for a treat tonight. And they introduce this entertainer. And the entertainer never shows up. And the music plays and music plays and music plays. Everyone's going, what's going on? So after about 30 seconds of this, I come running from the back of the room. I come out, ladies and gentlemen, the entertainer's been killed. We think it's one of you. And so then we're off to the races. So every trick, every routine is forwarding the plot of solving this murder. And the murder is, the murderer is somebody in the audience who murdered this fictitious character. It's hysterical. And it's, you know, uses a lot of standard magic props, a lot of standard mentalism props. I've created different versions of it, like a briefcase version I can do for a couple hundred people with like less than $100 of equipment. I've got a more elaborate version that uses a couple $1,000s worth of equipment if I want to really wow the audience or if it's a really big crowd. It's a very modular show that once you understand how it works, you can implant almost anything into it and really make it your own. When I was really immersed in the corporate market, it really made me stand out amongst the competition. My biggest draw for corporate entertainment was and is being a comedy hypnotist. They just love that. After a few years of doing comedy hypnosis in corporate events, I didn't like doing it because they never tell anybody I was going to be a hypnotist at the event. So now, you know, you got these people, they're like quite drunk and, well, now we've got a hypnotist and he's going to make you take off your blouses, ladies, and that of stuff. I'm like, oh my God. So it was just, it was just awful. So then they would contact me for the hypnosis show, and I was selling them on the murder by magic. But well, we had a magician last year, and I tell him the pitch that I just told you. Oh, that sounds so cool. It's different. I go, yeah. And it was a really easy sell. And so after I did that for a while, and I decided to get out of corporate because, you know, I don't like performing for drunks, I decided to make it available to the magic community, and I've sold probably like a dozen over the years. I mean, that's a lot. I mean, I don't push my products really hard, but it's out there if anybody wants it.
So where can they go if they want something like that?
They can go to professionalmagicproducts.com. It's where all my goodies are. I sell several Jim Caulfield products, several Peter Lochran products, and some of my own stuff too. And it's all on there. And they'll see it, Murder by Magic, and it outlines what's included with the package and all kinds of cool stuff. Yeah. So good times.
Sounds great. All right, we're going to switch gears a little bit now and do a fact or something John just made up. Sound like fun?
Oh, awesome. I love this.
I think it is. It's the variety artist's favorite game, I think.
Is it fact? Or is it something John just made up?
So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to give you a headline. You're going to tell me whether it's true or not and tell me a little more about it if it is true.
Cool.
Okay, here we go. First headline. Chris once set himself on fire during an outside gig.
Unfortunately, that's true.
Oh, no. How did you do that, or what happened?
Oh, this is so stupid. This is before I went full-time, so that's my escape clause. I did so many dumb things when I was like a part-timer. A buddy of mine were sitting in his apartment one night, we were watching Letterman, and Bob Hoskins, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, the lead actor from Roger Rabbit.
Oh, yeah, Bob Hoskins, yeah.
Yeah, you know, great actor, you know, a wonderful movie. At some point, I know that it came out that he was, I don't know if he was a carny or if he just had this weird skill where he could, he'd blow fire. So he got the alcohol in his mouth and went off to the bright part of the stage, put a torch up, blew into this huge ball of fire. Mm-hmm. So my friend and I, we like grabbed a bottle of Zippo, you know, grabbed a candle and did the same thing on his front yard. And I put this into my shows. I mean, can you imagine how idiotic that was?
And you're doing it part time.
Oh God. Yeah. So I did that. I did that at a few shows, only outside shows because I don't want to set the house on fire.
Yeah.
So I was doing it outside. And as I blew the fire, the wind caught and it blew the liquid back on my chin. So, you know, I had like this big Freddy Krueger blister on my chin for like weeks afterwards. It was like the dumbest thing in the world. And it was funny about that story is at the beginning of the show, it's like sometimes the performing gods rain upon you. And you know this, John. I was doing an outside show in the grass and I had the story that I told leading up to a production of a live goldfish. And the lead up is I mentioned the fact that I wanted a live spider, but I wasn't allowed to have a live spider tarantula when I was a kid. And I wanted a live snake, and I wasn't allowed to have a live snake. And at the moment that I delivered that scripted line before the production of the goldfish, a garter snake starts, you know, slithering between my legs. And one of the kids points at the snake and he goes, "Look, he made a snake." I picked up the snake. I took a bow. They clapped. I got credit for it.
You're like, thank you.
Then later on, the show came crashing back down to earth when I set myself on fire. So yeah, that was awful.
That's a show. You made a snake appear and lit yourself on fire. What a deal.
Oh, yeah. I guarantee you, whoever saw that show remembers it to this day, for all the wrong reasons.
I'm sure. No extra charge for those. All right, next one. Chris once cut off part of his knuckle during another outside show.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was true.
You and those outdoor shows.
Oh, I know. And coincidentally, I no longer offer outside shows for any reason.
Can't imagine why.
I was at this show for like a bank, and it was downtown Buffalo, and it was a really windy day, and the sound tech was up my keister. They're giving me a hard time. I was really stressed out because it was, for me, it was like a really big opportunity in front of this really big crowd. The wind was there. I guess I'll tell the story. I know very little about sound. I can make sound come out. I can make it come out and have it sound good. That's about all that I know. Mm-hmm. So I plugged my microphone into the DJ's sound system, and he kept on yelling at me, "Well, it's not stereo. It's not stereo." I said, "I can hear myself out of both speakers." "No, it's not stereo." And I still don't know what the hell he meant. So he's like barking in my ear right up until showtime. So I'm like really rattled. The wind's blowing. I had to cut out a couple of tricks because the wind was blowing. And I was just, I don't know what happened, but I was doing a cut and restored rope routine. The wind was blowing and I wasn't concentrating. I wasn't in the right performing frame of mind. And then just, chopped off the second knuckle on my finger. realized what happened and started bleeding heavily and just grabbed the towel from my table, wrapped it up really quick, and somehow was able to stumble my way through the rest of the show. Still have the scar to this day. And yeah, I never did that version of the cut and restart rope routine ever again. I did a different routine.
It was funny because a lot of magicians make the joke about when they cut the rope or they have their volunteer cut the rope. Yeah, it's the white part, not the pink part. But you didn't take that advice, did you?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, and the funny thing was, years later, I got a Jeff McBride video. And he was doing cut and restored rope routine on there, and he talked about the fact that he cut his hand once and some other famous magicians. So I'm like, at least I'm in good company.
There you go. All right, third one. Chris refuses to do the linking rings indoors or outdoors.
That is false. That is false. I don't do the linking rings. Although I love them, I'm meaning to learn a good linking routine forever, but I do the linking coat hanger routine for my anti-drug show. But no, that is false.
And by the way, the linking ring routine, they do offer it in hangers, like you just mentioned, but I've seen it with barbed wire. Somebody do it with gloves with barbed wire, with a number of different things that are linking ring type routines. All right, last one. A sleep deprived Chris once referred to the K-4 kids in a K-8 school as little bastards.
Oh, that's true.
Oh no! On stage?
On stage. Oh my God. That was about 3 years ago.
Oh.
I don't know what happened. Well, I was sleep deprived. But scripted line, I did the K-4 kids in the morning, and then after lunch, I did the 5-8 kids.
Yeah.
And the scripted line, because I script all my shows, the scripted line is, I make a reference to the little kids, and I go, yeah, I saw those little kids earlier. They're sadistic little buggers.
Oh, no.
And I get a nice laugh, and then I go on. And then just little bastards came out of my mouth. I'm like, I don't know why to this day. And I broke into a cold sweat, and some of the kids gasped. And I was just like, I'm done. I'm done. My whole career is done. I was just shaking. I was like so upset. And the principal came up to me afterwards. And this was a charter school, a really laid back charter school. The principal literally had kind of like just a, hey, man, how you doing? That just kind of laid back demeanor. And like, I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. It's just slip of the tongue. He goes, hey, man, don't worry about it. It's all good. Okay. The school has brought me back 3 times since.
Oh, man. But all you can think about for the rest of the show probably is what you said, huh? It's all going through your head as you're doing your other routines.
Oh, yeah. I was like 2/3 of the way through the show. I had like 15, 20 minutes to go, and I'm just like dying on the inside. I just wanted to run screaming out of the room, and it was just awful. Boy, I dodged a bullet with that one because, damn.
Yeah.
That was Fact.
Ooh.
Or something John just made up.
All right, so we're going to move on to some fan questions. You want some fan questions?
Sounds great. Lay it on me.
All right, here we go. Conrad Cologne, an excellent magician out of New Jersey, says, Chris is amazing. That wasn't his question.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It was very nice. I know Chris travels a lot for his assembly programs. How does he keep everything organized, hotels, travel, et cetera?
Okay. My approach to that is pretty low tech. I know a lot of people that go, if technology expands, they lean into technology. And I'm very reluctant to embrace technology. I mean, I, you know, got automation on my site and you know, that kind of thing. But as far as travel, what I usually do, if it's not winter, because here in the East Coast, you know, winter can cancel shows like nobody's business. If it's not winter, what I do is on Sunday afternoon, I sit down on my laptop and I book all the hotels I need for the following week. So all those reservations go into my email inbox I can access from my cell phone. But I often go to areas where cell phone reception isn't all that great. So I have to take all the hotel information. Oh, let me back up. I have a day planner, whatever it's called. We've got like a 3-ring binder, like a zippered thing, so everything's enclosed. So when I generate a new gig, it's in my online Mago system. So I have all my information for gigs online, but I also print out a physical piece of paper with all the gig information on it. In case, you know, technology dies, I can still access all my information, client contacts, everything. And on the back of that sheet, I just write down my hotel information right on there, hotel, phone number, address, everything. So if technology fails me, at the worst comes the worst, I can always run into a convenience store, borrow a phone and call the hotel and find out where the hell I'm going. Mm-hmm. So it's a very low-tech approach, but it keeps me on track. I know which hotel I'm going to at any time because that hotel information is paired both online and offline with the appropriate gig. So that's how I keep everything straight. It's pretty low tech, but it works for me.
No, that's smart because there are a lot of places that you don't get reception. The internet at some hotels is horrible.
Oh, very much so. I went to a gig one time where my client told me for high school, she goes, the only hotel within 30 miles of us is a bed and breakfast. I'm like, okay. So I got to the bed and breakfast and I could not get any hotel reception whatsoever. So I wanted to call my wife, tell her I got into town okay and everything. So I had to use their phone. And the guy had the demeanor, he's probably the nicest guy in the world, but he had no interpersonal skills. And he was like Dexter, you know, just like very quiet, very stoic, just glared at me the whole time making the phone call. Told me I was limited to 5 minutes and everything. And I'm like, oh my God. And, you know, put the chair up underneath the doorknob and went to sleep that night. But if I had been relying just on technology, I would not have had the information. So to me, the low-tech approach works.
So Conrad also asks, with so much time on the road, how does he balance work and life?
Well, right now it's really easy.
Yeah, it is.
I'll be honest, like up until the last few years, it was a bit of a problem. I was so business oriented and so driven. Because my family grew up very poor. Being able to do what I do and make a living at it is something it means a lot to me. But I always worry about where the next paycheck's going to come from. Because I worked a lot of really crappy jobs growing up. I never had a job where I made more than $8 an hour. Mm. You know, having a mortgage payment, car payments and everything, you know, it weighs heavily on my mind. You know, I always tried to stay prepared in case of any eventuality. So I was business driven for years and years and years, and it caused a rift in our marriage. I mean, not that we didn't love each other, but just we were like roommates, you know? Yeah. So the last few years, I made a concerted effort that when I'm home, I'm home. You know, I put the laptop away, I engage, we go out to dinner a lot. We plan 2 or 3 vacations a year where we go away. You know, we do like weekend jaunts. We go to Shays Performing Arts Theater. Mm. You know, when I'm home, I'm home. We plan for the appropriate downtime. You know, on weekends, you know, she's off, I'm off. So that works out really well too. So it's mostly being in the moment and appreciating what you have. I saw that question on the Facebook page and I wish I had a better answer than that, but it's what I do. I just try to be in the moment when I'm home and not work. Because before, when we had the rift, I worked all the time. I was home, I was on the computer, you know, I was ignoring her. Shame on me. So when I'm home, I'm home. And when I'm at work, you know, I try to make it so I get home sooner by taking less out of town gigs, which is ironic because I was actually working toward that goal this year, but taking less out of town gigs and well, problem solved now. So here we are.
Brett Chatfield, AKA Looney Balloony out of Oregon asks, who do you talk to when trying to book a show at a new school?
Honestly, I let them come to me. I mean, I know that's probably an unsatisfying answer, but my marketing platform consists of direct mail, AdWords, SEO, email blasts, and various points of contact with past clients. And if I'm misinterpreting his question, please, dude, correct me on Facebook. I'll try to answer it there. It sounds to me like you're talking about cold calling, and which I don't do. So I know some people do cold call still, and it works for them. I've heard a few. I don't want to say names, but I've heard cold call. If I'm wrong, I don't want to misrepresent them. But I've heard a few very busy assembly presenters still do cold calling, And if it works for them, great, but I don't have any insights for you. So I let the customers come to me. I mean, I reach out digitally, I reach out with direct mail and everything, but as far as approaching a school, I'll send out direct mail to PTO, PTA, assembly coordinators. I'll send out direct mail and email blast to principals. And then I maintain contact with past clients and past people who have reached out but not booked. So that's what I do. I hope that answers this question. If not, let me know.
Yeah, you do the same thing as I do. I believe it puts us in a better position when they reach out to us as opposed to us reaching out to them.
Yeah, psychologically, it's very different that way because, you know, they're coming to you, and psychologically, that's a more advantageous standpoint when it comes to discussing fees and whatnot. Yeah, that's, again, you and I are cut from the same cloth.
Yeah. All right. Stephen Bueller, an excellent magician and writer out of Southern California, asks, how do you choose magic tricks that are appropriate for mixed grade levels?
I do something that's different from many assembly, I'm not going to say all, but a lot of assembly presenters that I've met, I mean, great ones. You know, I mean, Tommy James is a friend, he does this. Doug Shear is a friend, he does this. A lot of people, they'll develop a show and they'll have it be appropriate for K through 5. More power to them, it's great. I mean, I'm not that good. So I developed two different shows for K through 2, 3 through 5. At any point, anywhere from 2/3, you know, maybe down to like half of the show is different based on the grade level. So in other words, my bully program, half the tricks I do for both age levels. And the other half of the tricks, I've got a certain set of tricks for the younger kids, certain set of tricks for the older kids. Now, how do I choose? I try to put myself in the mind of the kid, like what I would like. You know, I have this weird advantage. This is going to sound so weird, but there's some neurological evidence to back up what I'm about to say. I don't have kids, so I never matured.
Perfect.
There's a great guy that I'm friends with. He works in D.C., and he's like a research scientist, and he's got all these degrees and patents and everything. He used to be a nuclear submarine captain, just a really great guy. And I remember reading one of his articles he sent to me that when people, you know, become parents, there is a neurological process that happens. You know, they mature. And I'm probably getting the details wrong, but with my wife and I, we never matured. It's painting a picture of me like a man child, but I'm still able to kind of like step into the mindset of a kid. You know, like, what is a kid going to like? And a lot of it is just experimentation. Like when I happened upon the formula years ago that, okay, older kids from my performing style, they like tricks, you know, they like this trick, that trick, that trick, that trick, you know, certain kind of plots. I'm not going to go through them all. And then when I build a new show, I try to find, well, okay, I'll get into some details. Let me give you an example. I use a Pearl Viper in my bully show for the older kids.
Yeah, for those of you that are not magicians, Viper or Pro Viper, Viper, either way, it's a basket with a snake, a spring snake inside that jumps out and scares the heck out of the audience and then picks a card in the meantime. It's pretty cool.
Exactly, a signed card too. It's really cool. Yeah. So why do the kids like that? Because, you know, a lot of older kids, you know, they like card tricks, you know, you got YouTube going on. They like the quasi danger feel of the trick, you know, what's going to happen to the snake and the comedic element and everything. If I'm developing a new show, I try to find a like-minded trick. It's not necessarily with the snake, not necessarily with the card trick, but something with that kind of flavor to it.
Mm.
So does that make sense? You know, yes. Am I explaining that right? You know, I find certain tricks that work for me for my performing persona, for the age level of the kids I'm looking at, and I try to keep my performance material within those boundaries. For middle school kids, it's even more problematic. Yeah. I try for them to go toward Chris Angel, David Blaine style of tricks, which I don't care for either one of those performers, but they struck a vein with kids, teenagers and so forth of that vein, where and therefore the tricks are more organic, they're less silly, they're more, and pardon the term, they go more for the jugular kind of thing. You know, maybe there's an icky quality to it. You know, I got a danger trick. You know, I'll do the arm chopper for the middle schoolers. They love it. So for the little kids, I can go really, you know, like K through two, I can go really silly. Your change bag and your silk hanky tricks, for example. For the younger kids, it's all about comedy. With the older kids, they want to laugh too, but the trick has got to be really funny. Got to be really funny.
And it's got to be sharp.
Yeah.
One of the things for the middle schoolers, and I think this is reflected in what you said, is that they want to be older. When you're doing tricks for them that look like they're adult tricks, even though they may not be, but they look right. Like and they feel like adult tricks, it empowers those middle schoolers, especially the middle schoolers, more than even the high schoolers.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. You know, they got 1 foot in, you know, the little kid mindset and 1 foot in the teenager mindset because they're right in the middle. That's why they call middle schoolers.
Yeah. Last fan question. A friend of mine, actually, Obadiah Thomas, another great school assembly entertainer out of Southern California, asks, what is your method for repeat customers?
Oh, I love Obadiah Thomas. He is great. He's such a great guy, such a good friend. And I'll do a plug for him. He's got like, somebody wanting to get into school assemblies, he's at the best course out there. But I offer a course too, cheap plug, but Obadiah is simply outstanding, him and Mark Beckworth.
Yep.
A lot of my methods for repeat clients are covered in Obadiah's course, so I don't want to reveal any of that. But the stuff that I do myself, I send out a monthly e-zine where it's just like it's less of a pushing a show thing, even though I do push it, and more of just like a point of contact where I pick a, you know, like a goofy holiday, and I talk about that, you know, briefly, and then at the bottom I mentioned an assembly program, and then I at, you know, different points of the year, the classic times being at the beginning of the school year, right after winter break, you know, springtime, that kind of thing, you know, I do mailers and email blasts to all my clients, but I separate it out. If I'm mailing out to a cold email list, the opening paragraph, it reflects the fact that it's like, you've never heard of me before. Who am I? If I'm sending something out to a past client, then the language reflects that. Oh my goodness, Mrs. Jones, I had such a good time at my school, at your school last year, and here's what I'm doing this year. So I reference the past relationship. And then if it's a client, or excuse me, a prospect that has contacted me but never booked, then I reflect that. Oh, you may remember me. You contacted me last year or 6 months ago or whatever for this show. Well, here's what I'm offering this year. Red Ribbon Week is coming up, and here's what I offer for that. So whenever I mail to my lists, I always make sure to segment it out. Past clients, what I call warm leads, and then a totally cold list. And what I'm probably going to start doing when school gets back up in session is do more direct mail to my past list. You know, keep that relationship going. Yeah. So that's pretty much what I do. You know, and again, a lot of what I do, I can't cover here because it's in Obadiah's course. But for those of you who don't have this course, that's what I, you know, the things that I've outlined, that stuff not in Obadiah's. Oh, and the other thing, I'll mention another strategy too, and this is huge. There's the 300 day later email where somebody contacts you.
Oh, yeah.
Or they book you. And then and then 10 months later, because you know that within a couple of months, they're going to start looking again, ostensibly for another show the same year or the next year. You send out like a reminder email. And I just have it programmed in my automation that, you know, 10 months later, hey, you remember me from last year? And I know you got an event coming up. Let's talk. I book probably half a dozen gigs a year just off of that strategy alone. They're like, oh, Chris, it's good to hear from you again. I have no idea what they're talking about because I forgot.
And that's the show. That's the whole podcast. Did you have fun?
I had a blast. Thank you so much for having me on, John. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you for doing my show. Do you have some social media or something that you want to plug before I let you go?
They've got my website, professionalmagicproducts.com. All my goodies out there. Okay. And I do want to extend another offer to your listeners. This is stressful times. I mean, all of our businesses, most of us anyway, has completely collapsed. As a hypnotherapist, I created a lot of stress and anxiety reduction techniques I would teach my clients.
Oh.
So if anybody out there wants some stress management techniques, I'll email them to you. Just send me an email and I'll send them to you gratis. You know, it's all written material, some audio material you can listen to. A lot of the techniques, you can do them in like 30 seconds. So it's not like you have to sit down and you know, on a dark place, put on headphones. It's just, most of them are quick little strategies you can do anytime, anywhere to get yourself out of that negative mindset. Absolutely free. Just email them and just, I just want to do whatever I can to help the community.
And what is your email address so they can just shoot you out a quick email?
Sure. My email address is chrisjohnsoninfo@verizon.net. And Chris is CRISNOH. But chrisjohnsoninfo@verizon.net. Or contact me on Facebook. Send me a message in your email address and I'll get that out to you.
Thank you, my friend, for joining us today. That was great.
So thank you, John.
All right. And thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist Podcast. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist, but your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist, but until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
I'm recording myself fumbling. On a second here. All right.
Yay.
It is now almost 11 o'clock. Do you have a few more minutes? We'll do some fan questions and then get you heck out of here. How's that sound?
Oh, yeah. I'm great. Yep.
Okay, cool. I know. What do we have to do? Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I find myself with a plethora of time right now. So yeah. Yeah, we can do fan questions all day.
There you go. It'll be like the 12-hour podcast. All right, let me have a little drink of my water, and then we'll move on to some fan questions here. Hold on. Are you having fun? This is fun, right?
Oh, I love this. I mean, like I said, I'll tell the listeners this. I've been listening to your podcast for years, and John always introduced, he's this world famous person, and they read this book, and they've invented this and done that, and they traveled here and there. And I present to you, Paul Romhaney, or who Paul's on my mind because he's a friend. And then with me, I was like, oh my God, what's John going to say? Oh, he's busy. Here's Chris Johnson. I was like,
he's a busy dude, ladies and gentlemen, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. The guy you've never heard of, Chris Johnson. So I was nervous about that, but everything else, I'm having a blast. I really love your format, and I knew you're a great host too. So this is fun for me.